Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Shahid Buttar, Executive Director with the group Bill of Rights Defense Committee, here to talk about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, what's going on with the NSA, the National Security Agency, and surveillance of Americans' communications. Shahid, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Tell our listeners a bit about the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. Many people have heard you on the program here and other places, but you do some great work, so maybe just summarize it for us briefly.
You're very kind. We're a grassroots organizing support network founded to support grassroots activists in the wake of the introduction of the Patriot Act over a decade ago. And we work around the country to support diverse local coalitions that aim to bring these questions about government surveillance and the powers of the state into the public arena, to prompt debate and convert that debate into action.
Thank you for that. Now, one of the things that prompted me to give you a call and see if you could join us tonight was the fact that the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, released an opinion that they issued justifying the NSA's massive collection of Americans' phone communication metadata, as they call it. And maybe you could speak to what that justification was and how yourself and I know many other civil liberties advocates out around the country were, you know, pretty much totally in disagreement with this rationale for this blanket coverage, the dragnet coverage of Americans' communications, which has become so controversial since the revelations from Edward Snowden back a couple of months ago.
Absolutely. This the latest court opinion that was released was essentially authorizing the mass collection of metadata under Section 215 of the Patriot Act. It's analogous to the first of the orders released by Glenn Greenwald back in June. It's a Section 215 order authorizing, you know, mass collection from a lot of people, untethered entirely from the individual suspicion long required under our Constitution to justify government scrutiny of individual activity. And it's striking that a judge here, and remember, judges were created under our system to check and balance executive abuses. The judges of the FISA court are wholly complicit in the abuses under these programs. I do want to give the judge here, Judge Claire Egan, I believe is her name, credit for declassifying the opinion. That is at least one important move toward enabling public scrutiny of what has otherwise been entirely secret. But the substance of what she disclosed was offensive in itself, and the idea that metadata categorically does not present Fourth Amendment concerns, that's the amendment to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, it's this judicial contrivance that metadata doesn't implicate the Fourth Amendment, which is ridiculous, and to disregard the difference between an individual search of the sort that was raised in the case Smith versus Maryland that presented this question to the Supreme Court, to disregard how the difference between one person being searched and everyone being searched, you know, one person one time versus everyone all the time, those are entirely different things. And so to rely on Smith versus Maryland to justify mass surveillance is it just makes the judiciary look like a joke, quite frankly. And the FISA court is just that. It is a rubber stamp. And so I'm glad that the opinion was declassified. I'm glad that people are concerned about it. And I do hope that Congress does something to change the statutory framework under which this sort of activity takes place.
Shahid, what do you make of the justification we've long heard from the intelligence community, from the White House, and from this judge, that the massive collection of data is necessary so that the government can get access when they need it if a particular incident or an investigation reveals some terrorist plot somewhere that endangers our security, that this this data needs to be secured in a place where it won't disappear so that they can go back in time and put the pieces together to safeguard the country. That's essentially the argument, right?
That's essentially the argument, but A, it turns the Fourth Amendment on its head. B, it's entirely untested from a national security efficacy perspective. And C, it's simply ignorant of our country's history because we've made decisions not to, for instance, lock everyone in their homes after 5 p.m. to make sure that there aren't any traffic accidents. Right? That would be a tremendous restriction on liberty. It would certainly save lives, many more lives than the NSA has ever saved. But we don't do that. right? It's silly to even contemplate the prospect. So why would we contemplate the prospect of letting the government listen in on everything that anyone ever says or hears or reads or writes? That is the essence of a control society. And we sing anthems about being the land of the free. Well, this is what it means, right? So there's an existential commitment to freedom that I think that perspective ignores. From a national security standpoint, this mosaic theory on which the NSA and its defenders or apologists, I should say, rely is completely untested. It doesn't actually work. If it worked, there wouldn't have been a bombing in Boston 3 months ago. And the NSA claims certain victories in the effort to having kept the country safe, but you know the facts of those victories are generally unknown. And the one case that they have cited as an example of its the efficacy of its surveillance efforts, you know, after having admitted that in public, the defense lawyer reopened the case on the ground that the evidence obtained in the case was illegal. So it's sort of like, you know, the only thing we know the NSA has actually done is give local prosecutors the opportunity to lie to judges about where the evidence is coming from in drug cases. But that is actually happening. Are we actually protecting the country against any legitimate threats is anyone's guess. And here's the kicker. Are we setting up the tools through which some future administration or any prosecutor within the chain of command could subvert democracy by suppressing dissent using these very powerful tools? That's the ultimate question. That's why it goes to the essence of whether or not we will live in a free society, and that's why this entire enterprise is quite frankly unconstitutional.
We're speaking with Shahid Buttar. He's executive director of the group Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and we're talking about the National Security Agency's massive collection of Americans' phone communication data. And Shahid, I wanted to ask you, is there a way to balance out people's rights of privacy and their basic civil liberties and still satisfy the intelligence agency's stated need to get access to phone numbers and all sorts of other
Absolutely.
Data that they say they need to protect the country? Is there a way to do that?
Absolutely. You know, no one's saying that the NSA shouldn't have any powers at all. And no one's saying, for instance, in other contexts, that the FBI shouldn't have powers or that the local police departments in their fusion centers shouldn't have powers to investigate leads. Places where they think someone may have done something wrong. That's very different, and that's the kind of scrutiny that our Constitution permits. It's a very different thing to say that in the effort to anticipate potential wrongdoing, we, the government, are going to come to know everything about everyone so that we can then, you know, sort of play the tape back in case anything goes wrong. That's the essence of what turns a free society into a controlled one. And we may not feel it now, but we will feel it in future generations. We feel it already in discrete communities. The New York City's, for instance, Muslim youth population, is on the record about being depoliticized. You know, there's a report that came out very recently quoting many members of student organizations saying that they have intentionally depoliticized the discourse within their communities because they don't want to be subjected to this kind of scrutiny, even though they are anyway. Right, and they have been. The fact of the matter is that this kind of surveillance chills speech. It chills people from thinking independently, and it dumbs down our civic culture. And you know, we were meant to be, and the founders of our country attempted to leave for us a superstructure that would enable us to be governed for, of, and by the people. Right, informed, active citizens, not sheep being led to our figurative slaughter. But that's exactly what's happening. Particularly, I do want to note this. Under the administrations and the congressional leaderships of both of the major corporate political parties, right, the Democrats and Republicans in the White House over the last two administrations and both houses of Congress are thoroughly complicit in this. And it is interesting to see so many members of Congress willing to split off from their parties in the last several weeks to raise an American flag in the face of what is otherwise a very Soviet or Chinese approach to monitoring everyone in the United States all the time, even though we've done nothing wrong.
You know, there's insistence by the intelligence agencies and the White House that says, you know, although the power is there and this data has been collected, there are no cases of abuse. But of course, that's not true. And I wonder if you would bring out to our audience a bit of what we know about those abuses from the FISA court itself, that there was leaked opinions that the NSA had overstepped its bounds on some occasions. And you also have people in Congress like Republican James Sensenbrenner, who talks about how the FISA court and the NSA have violated the spirit of what he himself had put into legislation years ago during the Patriot Act days.
Absolutely. And, you know, raising Sensenbrenner is very meaningful. James Sensenbrenner was the author of the Patriot Act. And for the author of the Patriot Act to say that his signature achievement is being abused, and that's basically the essence of his concern. You know, he, in Section 215, for instance, the provision of the Patriot Act at root of the FISA court opinion that was recently issued, and the same provision in the earlier case released by Greenwald and Snowden. Sensenbrenner, the congressman, said that he never anticipated that Section 215 would be used to justify bulk collection, that is to say, mass data about millions of people at once. He meant it to be an individual case regarding targeted investigative authority. You asked me before, how do we reconcile civil liberties and national security? That is the essence of it, individual suspicion. That is the cornerstone of our constitutional framework. And we abandon it at great peril. It leaves the intelligence agencies with plenty of room to operate to say that if we have any reason at all to suspect someone, we can do X, Y, and Z. It's the collection of this panopticon sort of approach to surveillance that poses a constitutional problem.
A couple of months ago, President Obama addressed the Edward Snowden leaks and the concern around the country that their privacy was being invaded, that their civil liberties were being violated. And he put forward a slew of different proposals and action plans, including putting someone before the FISA court to argue on the civil liberties side of some of these issues that come before the court. He also talked about appointing a review panel to really scrutinize what the NSA is doing in the surveillance collection operations to protect against violations. Now, it was interesting that not long after that speech, President Obama appointed James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, to that review panel, which made a lot of people do a double take and, making this statement that Obama just appointed the fox to guard the chicken coop. What's your take on Obama's proposals? Are any of them, credible, and could they be of use?
The rhetoric of his speech was great. I was very enthused to hear the president talk about the need to take civil liberty seriously. I hope very much that his administration listens to his words, because to this point, that's all they've been. There was the announcement of some very cursory reforms, like the review panel that you mentioned. He did pay a nod to wanting to declassify some of the FISA court opinions. That also could be very meaningful. The mere fact that he said anything in itself had symbolic importance, but it really hasn't gone any further than that. Clapper is, let's just be clear, a criminal of the first order. He has admitted to lying to Congress, which is to say the American people, about grave, massive, ongoing constitutional violations, essentially embezzling tax dollars to assault and undermine the U.S. Constitution. I mean, there are worse words than embezzlement for that, and they start with a T, and I'm not going to throw them around, but the point here is that, by his own admission, Clapper has committed a felony far worse than the sort for which we routinely imprison people around the country. And it is preposterous that he even still has a job, let alone has been put in charge of the review panel to assess his own crimes and the agency's crimes that he leads. Beyond the fact of the review panel, I think there's huge hope here in Congress finally engaging. Now, Congress has not done a far-reaching investigation of the domestic surveillance apparatus in over 30 years. And the last time it did, what the U.S. Senate found was what it called a, quote, sophisticated vigilante operation aimed squarely at suppressing the legitimate exercise of First Amendment rights of speech and association, end quote. That's from the Church Committee report. That was 1976. The same abuses are happening today on a much, much more vast scale, and Congress has been asleep at the switch. And if the media firestorm and the grassroots clamor coming from all corners of the political spectrum and all corners of the country forces Congress to finally meaningfully grapple with these issues, we could end the day with many of the fundamental protections in the Bill of Rights restored. I want to make one point very clear for your listeners. There will be a lot of fluff and distraction, legislative red herrings in the debate this fall. There have already been, I think, 15 bills introduced to address some facet of NSA spying, and most of them are, you know, even where useful, entirely marginal to the ultimate issue here. It's not just a single program that's offensive. It's not Section 215 that's the problem. It's not the PRISM program, which taps the back end of the major internet companies' backbones like Google and Apple. It's not the XKeyscore program that's the problem, and that's the one that enabled a 20-something-year-old Edward Snowden working as a contractor to essentially hack the email address of any member of Congress, or anyone else for that matter, or anyone's ex-wife, or, you know, the person in high school who they felt slighted by. It's the totality of those programs. It is the iceberg beyond the tips that we have seen through the discrete leaks that the whistleblowers have enabled. And the only bill in Congress that would do that is the Surveillance State Repeal Act, introduced by Representative Rush Holt from New Jersey. He's the only physicist in Congress. And he has a bill that would essentially unwind the war on the American people that's taken place over the last decade in one fell swoop. And it is an important piece of legislation to draw out, particularly because most of the momentum is on other bills that would do far less to change the debate.
Would you be so kind as to repeat the name of that bill again for our listeners?
Of course. It's called the Surveillance State Repeal Act, introduced by Democratic representative from New Jersey, Rush Holt, H-O-L-T. And to the extent members of Congress hear from their constituents that they want to see their representatives co-sponsoring that bill that would repeal the Patriot Act entirely and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act amendments of 2008 entirely, to not only whittle away at the edges of these abuses, but rather, you know, pull the root out from the ground and make sure that the NSA is actually doing its job of national security investigations instead of turning its fangs on the American people in precisely the way that President Eisenhower warned us would happen when he left office 60 years ago. You know, these are not unpredictable events, and the people most informed about them have been screaming about this for decades, you know, long before the current controversy. You know, everything from Daniel Ellsberg most recently, you know, say Thomas Drake, or some of the NSA whistleblower Snowden. You know, Snowden wasn't the first. Lots of NSA whistleblowers have been saying there's a problem here. William Binney is another one. You know, there several of them have come on the public record to say that we were being paid to undermine the rights of the American people and wage a war on the Constitution. And, you know, no one would listen to them. Snowden shows up with the documents, and now people are listening. I think it is long overdue for some people to lose their jobs, for some statutes to be changed, and some agencies' entire operations to be shut down.
What a lot of people don't understand, and I only got reacquainted with this history a little while ago, is that way back when, long before, I don't know if it was the 80s or the late 70s, but national intelligence agencies were pushing a bill called S1. Again, long before, decades before 9/11, the September 11th terrorist attacks, and it was, I think, one of the bills was called Senate Bill 1, S1, and it contained pretty much the final provisions that we see now in the Patriot Act. So this was a plan to really unleash, federal enforcement agencies on the public with less protections than we'd enjoyed earlier, and that this wasn't totally triggered by the threat of terrorism. I don't know.
You probably know this history
better than I do. So,
well, I mean, not going that far back, unfortunately, and I look forward to learning more, but just with respect to the Patriot Act in particular, it was pulled off the shelf. I mean, it was introduced weeks after 9/11. It was thousands of pages long. Nobody writes something like that fast. And quite frankly, nobody read something like that because it was so voluminous, and quite frankly, Congress would pass anything in the wake of a major attack said to just, you know, to enable intelligence agencies to do their important work of keeping the American people safe. But now that we actually see the facts, and we know that the NSA is not just pursuing potential terrorists, but rather spying on every business that uses Verizon as its telecom provider, including our organization, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, which is one reason why we're suing the NSA with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, when we discover through the documents not that the government's most secret counterintelligence agency is using its formidable secret budget to, again, keep us safe, but rather that it's using its formidable secret budget in a time, incidentally, when we're going through budget crises, right, to do who knows what, and that when called before Congress, the leaders of the agencies either lie outright and then admit to it, or in other cases, just refuse to give the information that Congress is looking for. That is one thing you asked about the president's speech before. I do want to take one particular exception with something the president keeps saying, and he has to know it's not true. He keeps claiming that Congress has been briefed on this situation, which is just not even remotely within the realm of fact. That Congress has had multiple attempts at oversight and at every turn been actively impeded. When the Director of National Intelligence shows up and lies to Congress, what that means is Congress isn't able to do its oversight, and the blocks are in the executive branch. And that's been true over each of the last two administrations. Remember, the NSA's programs were hatched in dark rooms by Dick Cheney and the Bush administration, and now they've become... unfortunately, they've been taken in under the umbrella of the Obama administration, and the Bush-Obama panopticon that these programs represent is just a frontal assault on the vision of liberty that the founders of our country attempted to leave for us. There's one piece I want to note here also in particular, that these rights were not won through elite processes. They were won because people of all stripes and all walks of life stepped forward to make sure that we had these rights, right? Everything back from, say, women's suffrage to ending slavery, right? These were mass movements that changed the dial. And it's mass movements that will end these kinds of programs. And we've already seen it emerge. It's swelling around the country. There are mobilizations, particularly on the East Coast in D.C. planned the weekend of October 26th that will be drawing attention to these issues. And at the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, we're happy to connect anybody concerned about these abuses to coalitions where you live who are raising an important voice in defense of the fundamental constitutional rights we all share as Americans across our different political parties, across our different faiths, and across our different races.
Well said, Shahid. I did want to ask you one brief question while we just have a couple of minutes left, and we'll make sure to get the website in there so our listeners can connect with you and your group. But there's been, some embarrassing revelations made via Edward Snowden and the Guardian newspaper. And I'm wondering, when we have Brazil's president call off a meeting with President Obama because of the surveillance that's obviously been going on of many countries around the world, which is not surprising. I mean, I'm not surprised that the United States spies on any number of nations around the world, allies and enemies alike, as well as the United Nations. We actually knew that occurred during the run-up to the Iraq War in 2003. But what do you make of these revelations about the U.S. spy apparatus when it comes to foreign nations?
It's interesting because I think the international community could be the difference between for a long time, domestic constitutionalists have been getting steamrolled by, for lack of a better word, authoritarians, right? And authoritarian agencies that have the power of the military industrial complex behind them. And the, congressional votes secured by, the contributions and votes from people in defense industries and so on and so on. The international community has been very pivotal at times in the past in addressing domestic human and civil rights issues. There is an analysis from which, for instance, the civil rights movement crested, not only because of the domestic mobilization prompted by figures like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. and many others, but also because particularly the Soviet Union was shaming us on the international stage for denying equal rights to people while claiming this legacy of democracy and freedom for all people, right? So there was sort of this hypocrisy at root, and we had an international, at that point, adversary who was able to use that hypocrisy to its advantage. in a unipolar world after the fall of the Soviet bloc, there hasn't been any similar sort of check on our international hegemony. Might be a strong word, but let's just use it for now. The point I'm trying to draw is that now we live in a multipolar world, and the emergence of Brazil, for instance, as a resistor of American co-optation of the internet is significant. And it's, you know, it's Latin America's most widely internet using country. It's the number two user of YouTube, right? It's a big deal that Brazil is talking about building landline connections to South America and then undersea connections directly to Europe, bypassing the U.S. to keep the NSA's grubby hands off its data. It's not the only country. In Germany, tens of thousands of Germans marched in Berlin earlier this month about American spying activities. And it's interesting because Germany, of course, particularly the eastern part of the country, they lived through pervasive surveillance. They know what it's like. It is not an abstract fear to the people in that country, and they take our abuses personally. It's become an issue in the German chancellor elections. And the fact that we have managed to alienate our allies, right? Brazil was an ally, and its president just denied an opportunity to come to the U.S. and be honored, you know, while taking these steps to create some independence for its users from a privacy standpoint, in ways that are somewhat clumsy, I should note, because state control over internet access is not preferable to, you know, a decentralized one. Anyway, the point is, it's absolutely huge, and I do hope that between the domestic dissent from the left and right, grassroots and elite, and from the international pressure that they force through multiple channels our government to reckon with the abuses of the national security establishment, not just in the NSA, but also the FBI and the surrounding set of intelligence agencies, and restore the constitutional rights that have long made our country great.
Well, thanks, Shahid. We've run out of time, but let's leave our listeners with the web address for your group, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee.
You can find us online at BORDC. That's Bill of Rights Defense Committee, BORDC.org.
Great to have you here again, Shahid. Appreciate the analysis and taking the time to be with us tonight. Appreciate it.
You're very kind. Thanks for having me on. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Good night. And that was Shahid Buttar, Executive Director of the group, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee.